up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. I've said this a few times, that I'm all in favor of the playoff, and I know eventually it'll be expanded, and I've accepted that. I was never a fan of the playoff idea, because I never really thought college football was extremely broken. I really liked the uniqueness of the sport, that it separated itself by not, one, letting everybody in, you know, or at least a lot of people in, like college basketball does, or create this system where, you know, you can win your division with a lousy record and get in, like in the NFL, where a 7-9 team can get in. Or in baseball, where they were just expanding it and they had this one game wild card and whatnot, just always appeasing to the postseason crowd. I always liked the fact that college football was different because games really mattered on Saturday. And the process in which we determined the national championship went from just voting on it to actually creating a system, albeit flawed. It still meant that the games mattered on Saturday, that you could be riding high and you could still, you have these games where they were just must wins, that you had to take these games and win them in order to be in competition with everybody for the first two spots. The playoffs still does that a little bit, but never forget, this weekend, LSU and Alabama are going to be playing. And it wasn't that long ago where this game in 2011 was a field goal fest in which LSU won. And at the time, people said, well, that means Alabama's not going to play for the national championship. Now, this is when the old BCS was around. And it proved otherwise. Alabama did play for the national championship. And it got its rematch with LSU. And now, that game and that situation came a few years after people didn't want to see Michigan and Ohio State play again for the national championship. Could this game this year do the same thing? Meaning the loser isn't as done as we think that they are. That the one loss that could keep them out of the Atlanta championship game is almost a blessing because you don't have another roadblock en route to the playoff. I think in the end, this could actually be another situation where LSU and Alabama prove once again that a big matchup on Saturday could still result in a postseason appearance.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is a Throwback Thursday. 1991 is the date. Magic Johnson is the topic on Throwback Thursday. On this date, in 91, he announced he was HIV positive. Again, many of us thought that would mean we were going to watch him pass away right in front of us. Here we are, 2019, and he's healthy, roll along, still deals with it.
28 years later.
28 years later.
Insane to think about.
Still moving along and still takes the cocktail. They did a feature on this years ago, I think, on Real Sports, where he shows the pills he still has to take on a daily basis. But, man, you would have won a lot of bets if you had predicted that in 2019 he'd be relevant and around, and you would have totally forgot he was HIV positive. Just really, really, really fascinating.
No, like we mentioned, there's a whole generation that doesn't even know.
Watched him and you know, hitting adulthood.
And what's kind of weird, too, is that whole generation isn't really fearful.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember how petrified we were?
Yeah, everybody was. It was really, really scary. It just, because everybody you saw at least knew. I mean, I didn't know anybody who had it, but
I knew either.
I knew the celebrities of the day that had it. They all died. They all were dying. And then you'd see like documentaries on it, and they would talk about, you know, all these people that had died from it. And you were just like, how do you get it? Nobody really knew. So when Magic Johnson announced, and I also think he did some good things with it, because he did the PSAs. He did talk to people about it. He did talk about safe sex and all of those other things. And he was very open about it and willing to say, this is what I've done. This is how I lived. This is how you shouldn't be living. This is very different. It made the NBA come out and question. I mean, there were legitimate concerns about playing against him. There were legitimate concerns about what that would mean. You know, what we mentioned, Karl Malone was very worried about it. He did make a comeback. Remember he won the MVP at the All-Star game like a year later, I think? Or was it that? I think it was that winter. He kind of came back and played. But people were curious about what did this mean? He tried to come back. He coached. He did a talk show, bought some businesses, became an entrepreneur, got into owning the Dodgers and was president of the Lakers, tech talk show host. Now you already mentioned that. Working in ESPN and being an NBA analyst. He did it all. He did it all. And he's still doing it to this day. And you would have won a lot of bets if you had predicted that. So that is Throwback Thursday for 1991. All right, so something I was touching on the top of the hour, about the big game nature of college football, it still does exist. I mean, four teams is not 16. All right. Four teams still puts pressure on you to win games during the regular season. I know the committee says go out and get a tough schedule, and if you lose, we still won't hold it against you. There were some years where that wasn't the case. There were some years where, like, LSU lost twice and won the national championship, but there's still a big game feel for it. I think this game could be just like it was in 2011. Alabama didn't get hurt by losing in the end, because there was enough around them to prop them up in the BCS standings. And Oklahoma State was the one that was kind of perplexing Alabama that year. LSU was number one. Who was fighting for two? It ended up being the Crimson Tide. This could have that same kind of feel, although a different circumstance. Alabama could lose, LSU could lose, both could be in front of the committee when it's all said and done, and both could still move on. If you're Oregon, though, and your only loss of the season was to Auburn, and you ran the table, won the Pac-12, if you got upended by a team like LSU or Alabama that didn't play for its conference championship, you watch how fast they're going to start screaming for this to be changed. And, I mean, you have all these different proposals out there. Things like, okay, let's make it six teams with two byes, and the Power Five teams all, you only can be your conference champion. That's the only one that can get in. Everybody have a conference championship game. Your champion is in. And then the last one is for an at-large bid for anybody across the board. Or some have said that at-large bid should be the non-Power Five, the group of five, if you will, or the non, the non-group of five, like, your AAC champion or your whoever. Okay, look, we don't like it when a 7-9 team goes to the NFL. We understand why they go to the playoffs. We understand winning a weak division. We get it. But it does drive you crazy when a 7-9 team, and it doesn't happen often, but when it does happen, that a 10-6 team doesn't go in, but a 7-9 team gets in because it won its division. We understand the rules. We accept the rules, but there's something wrong with it. I don't want that to happen either. I don't want a team to go 12-0 during the regular season, play a East division and the last game of the season, get upset in the championship game, and that team that has maybe two losses gets into the college football playoff. Now you're talking about, like a real playoff. What separates college football is it tries to do its very, very best to give you the best possible champion it possibly can, using the regular season as a barometer for that. Whereas other sports just get in and then anything can happen. You don't even have to be one of the best teams. You could win your division, like I mentioned, at 7-9. You could win your conference basketball tournament as one of the weaker seeds and get into the NCAA tournament, and anything can happen. Right? There are so many circumstances in other sports that say, look, the goal of the regular season is to just get into the playoffs any shape, way, or how. Doesn't matter how you get in. If you can get in with an 8-8 record, if you can get in at 9-7, that's great. If you can get in at 82-80, that's great. If you can get in as one of the seventh seed in the NBA, that's great. If you can get in as a conference basketball champion who had a lousy season but caught fire in March, that's okay too. College football says we are so different than that. We don't want that. What we want is the champion of this sport, the guy that's holding up the Crystal Trophy, has done it all season long. That does go against everything that I had just mentioned, which is we in sports, we are programmed to go, what's my path to the playoffs? And when I get there, then I want to, you know, then I'll figure it out. My team will figure it out from there. But what's my path? Right? If you're in a weak division in the NFL, that could benefit you if you lose your starting quarterback, because you don't have to be one of the top six teams in the AFC or the NFC. You just have to win your division. And if you can do that, you might have a terrible record, but you're in. In college football, they go, no, no, we are judging you. It's all about what you've done. It's about your resume, because at the end of the day, we want the champion of college football to be rewarded for that. The regular season has to have merit. I used to say this all the time to people over and over again. I used to say, you can give me these 16 team massive formulas, and we're going to be playing playoff football from early December all the way through to January. And you could think it's awesome because you can look at the matchups and say they're great. And I would agree with you. If you get me a tournament where Oregon's going to play Florida, and then the next game it's Alabama going up against Oklahoma, and the next game is going to be Michigan going to play USC, I can get by that. I can enjoy that. But you'll miss Saturdays, man. You will miss those games that have a level of importance around them. You'll miss those games. You'll miss the chaos on those Saturday nights where all hell is breaking loose and everybody's losing. And what does this all mean? You'll miss it because it's unique. If you want to just have a sport like everybody else in the same kind of method, in the same kind of way, fine. Have the 16 teams, lay it all out for a long tournament. In the end, I wouldn't hate you for it. I wouldn't even not watch. I'd absolutely watch, and I probably would enjoy it. But the uniqueness of college football is always built in the fact that it really does absolutely want to reward the best of the best from the whole season, and you can't sneak your way into this thing. If you're a Missouri with three losses and you somehow get to the Atlanta for the SEC championship game because you've won and you beat Georgia and Florida, but it was a kind of a weak division, you shouldn't go to the playoff because you beat an undefeated Alabama or LSU or Auburn or anybody else like that. You shouldn't. Now, if they changed it, it would take a few years and we would adjust because we do. Remember, at the beginning of October, I said I was absolutely on against the idea of a one-game playoff for a wild card spot. One-game wild card, I should say, in Major League Baseball. I thought it was gimmicky and stupid, but I changed my mind. I like it. I have enjoyed that over the years. I'm willing to admit I was wrong then. I enjoy it today. I would enjoy a 16-team playoff. I would eventually come around to this, but I would miss Saturday. That matters. I would miss these games that have tremendous importance. Florida-Georgia last weekend, for my wife, for example, was extremely important because she really wanted the Gators to go to the SEC championship game. She was really pulling for it. And this was the game that opened up the door to that. And now they're not. It's likely that they're not. I think there's a way they can still do it. And Georgia still has to play Missouri and Auburn. And, you know, they could lose two games. But right now, there's a feeling that door is closed. Is it fair? Yeah, you can argue either way. But it has value. That game had value. LSU-Alabama is supposed to have value, and it does. It does. The winner is likely to go to the SEC championship as a representative of the West. But if we're making the argument that the loser also has a strong resume, too, if they close out with wins and only have that one loss, then it does diminish the value. It means that this game doesn't have the significant impact in the punch that it used to back in the day. But as I said at the top of the hour, this was the game that said it all. This was the game that said, you think this is for a right to play for the national championship? You're right. But if you think the loser of this game doesn't have a chance to get in, you're wrong. And that's when they just picked two teams by computer. With the eyeballs and the brains and the analysis on paper and a discussion in a room, the loser of this game on Saturday is likely to get in again. The loser of this game is likely once again able to compete for a national championship. We'll see, obviously, how they view the loser of this game and how the loser of this game does lose. If it's 50-10, no. But if it's 42-40, yes. If it's 36-30, maybe. If it's 36-33, yes. All of those are still in play. When you used to sit terrified in front of the TV on a Saturday because your team was down in the fourth quarter, then you knew this was the year. The quarterback was good. The recruits were starting to perform, unbeaten going into week eight. And then you had this pesky team in the conference that was not going away like they should have. You may have hated it at the time, but you were participating in something very unique in sports. The regular season mattered tremendously, more than in any other sport. I watch college basketball for the entertainment. I don't watch college basketball for the urgency. I get the urgency in March. I don't watch it for the urgency. Give me two good basketball teams. Let me settle down and watch them. The loss means nothing to me. It used to mean everything in college football. Don't lose it. I don't want it to be lost. Expanding it would lose it. Your thoughts on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue along on a Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. SB Nation AM 1991 is Throwback Thursday. This date, Magic Johnson announcing he's HIV positive. So this is the good music of the day. This is a good song, wasn't it?
It was. I was when I was researching songs yesterday, I came across this, and I was trying to explain to my son. I said, for whatever reason, I still don't know the reason, all these big hair bands during this time came out with a slower song.
Yeah, the little power ballad.
Yeah.
Right? They all did. They all did.
I have no idea why. Was it because it was selling on the radio? The heavier stuff wouldn't get airplay?
Maybe that's it. Maybe that was it. Because, you know, you could get on certain stations with music like this rather than your other stuff.
Yeah, because what was that? Extreme?
Yeah.
I mean, we played a song from them coming into the last break, Wholehearted. But I think they're more known for More Than Words.
Yeah, I think so, too. Cam Neely was in one of their videos, Extreme. The hockey player for the Bruins? Yeah. He was in one of their videos back in the day. Hey, improve visibility and save money at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stop by to see their See Better Drive Safer sale. You can earn a $15 gift card after mail-in rebate when you purchase either Sylvania headlight bulbs or Bosch Focus or Trico Titan wiper blades. You know what I'm going to say next? They'll even install your wiper blades for free while you wait. How great is that? That's amazing. Don't risk your safety because of poor visibility and let the professional parts people at O'Reilly help you find just what you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. By the way, winter in Austin, let us know if you've changed your wiper blades. We're worried. We want to make sure you drive safe. So go get those wiper blades changed. Michael on Twitter, if they go to an 8-game playoff, talking college football, the top 4 seeds should get to play the first round games at home. It still gives relevancy and importance to LSU-Alabama type games. Yeah, I agree. Okay. I think there's ways to do this that doesn't really take away the games. But man, I got to be honest with you, and this is maybe just me. I might be in the minority on this. I used to love Chaos Saturday, man. I used to love it. I used to love it when you used to sit back and be like, oh my God, they lost and they're losing. Oh, it was so fun. And then the next day to see how it was all going to play out when you were just going for top two teams. I know it drove everybody crazy. Listen, the college football playoff argument has been around forever. And there was a time I thought in my lifetime I would never see it. I thought, all right, they're never going to do this. You know, there was all this bowl argument and how powerful the bowls were. But then I read Death to the BCS. Dan Wetzel wrote it along with a couple of other guys. It was really eye-opening. I thought I knew the inner workings of college football. I didn't know the inner workings that much. Death to the BCS, it's kind of irrelevant now. It's kind of a book that you wouldn't read because there is no reason now that the BCS is dead. But if you still want to know why the BCS and college football did what it did for many, many years, what was really going on with these bowls, what was really going on with the way the business of college football worked, this was the book. It really exposed. I mean, there were guys in bowl committees, like you would have like a bowl in Phoenix or something. The guy was making like $600,000 a year just being the president of this bowl. And, you know, so they wanted to protect all of that, all of those people. So it was a flawed system. And I don't want to go back to that with the computer and all that. You know, and I know I've told the story about my friend who was a Harris poll voter, and that Harris poll counted a lot. And I still to this day don't think he watched enough football to make a real honest analysis of everything. He was a smart guy, knew the sport, but he also had to spend his Saturdays covering college football that was completely irrelevant to the larger conversation. And I used to tell him, you need to be like a Buffalo Wild Wings or a place like that watching all these games. Like, what are you doing going to Laramie to watch Wyoming, Colorado State? That's silly. You have this responsibility as a Harris poll voter, and you're wasting your Saturdays covering Air Force? Are you crazy? You should be like, honey, I got to watch football pretty much from like noon until like 11:30 at night. You know, every Saturday.
Except this Saturday. Because once LSU Alabama happens,
right, you can turn it off.
Does it really matter what game comes after?
Yeah, I remember when I was in college, I had an English teacher, and he had a list of topics, right? And he said, guys, I just want you to write something. I want you to write something you're passionate about. So I put a list of topics here that you can choose from. He did everything from abortion to politics to whether or not zoos are ethical to college football playoff. He tried to come up with a million of these topics, and he even said, if it's not on here and you want to write about it, come to me and talk about it. But he goes, the goal of the essay was make an argument and support your argument. So a lot of guys in the English class chose college football playoff. And all of them, except me, he told me when we had to do this like one-on-one, he says, everyone in this class but you were the only one that wrote an essay on why college football playoff was a bad idea. And I got an A on the paper, but the only reason I got an A on the paper was it was easy to make the anti-arguments, right? There was a whole list of reasons why at the time college football shouldn't do this. The bowl games were significantly important, right? It did take away from the viability of the regular season. There was no real way to put one together. You couldn't use the rankings, or you could, but it was kind of a flawed system. And then nobody knew where the games should be played. Should they be played at home? Like one of the arguments I made in the essay was, let's say you say you're going to use the bowl system, right? Do people really have the money to travel every single week to watch their team play? Like, they won't do this for college basketball. Like, if you have a team like Virginia, you know, that's good, they'll skip going, like an average fan. I'm talking about a family of four that's a big Virginia fan. If they can't get to the local site because it's nearby, they'll skip the first or two round games and maybe spend their money on the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. But college football, you were asking these stadiums to be filled with 70, 80,000 people at these bowl games for a first round game against a 12 seed. I mean, did people have that kind of money to fly, hotel, tickets, rent a car, food, all of that, and then go, guess what? We're doing it right. I'm going right back and doing it again. We went to Boise this weekend, and I guess we got to go to Pasadena now. Like, it was a complicated system. Then they started going, well, let's just have these at neutral sites. And then, you know, that kind of helped. But I don't know. This weekend, LSU at Alabama, I don't care if the loser goes to the playoff. I don't, you know, this game is still so good. It's got so much on the line. Because if you've been following this, LSU's last victory in this series was in 2011, a 9-6 field goal game where the defenses were on top. And we might get the exact opposite coming up on Saturday. How awesome is that? I can't wait. I hope Tua does play. I hope it's a shootout. I hope it's a game unlike anything LSU and Alabama have ever seen in their history. And I don't know their history all that well. So if you come up with a game in the 50s, you know, like 62-60, okay. I'll trust you. But in my lifetime, I've never seen Alabama and LSU go into a massive shootout.
I would say instead of 9-6, let's go 49-46.
Let's go 49-46.
That'd be great.
Just chucking that ball all over the field, right?
And it's also important for the Heisman because Joe Burrow, this is his Heisman game. He's had great moments this season. I thought the Texas game was a signature Heisman game for him. But this is the game. Beat Alabama, beat that defense, get that road victory. It worked for Johnny Manziel in 2012. If Joe Burrow wins this thing and wins this convincingly, he will lock up that award, even if he has a little bit of a stinker down the stretch. It's that important for those reasons.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is the good, the bad, and the dumb on a throwback Thursday. And a day where we are looking back on 1991 and Magic Johnson declaring that he was HIV positive and how sad that was. But yet, at the same time, good, I guess, that he's still alive and still with us. I don't wish he's still, you know, wish he had it. But in fact, 2019, he's still around. It's kind of got that dual approach to it.
It's like one of those things. Sometimes I second guess. It's like, is this one of those conspiracy theories?
Kind of.
Did he announce he had it to bring more awareness to it?
That we should get into that coming up because there are people who really have questioned that over the years. Yeah. Let's get to the good on this throwback Thursday.
The good. This is actually a throwback good, but I have multiple goods here. So we'll get through the throwback good first. I haven't checked this out. I need to check it out. But Nirvana's YouTube channel, you know, all these bands have their own YouTube channels. Whoever's running Nirvana's YouTube channel is awesome because I guess just recently a bunch of remastered unplugged rehearsal clips have appeared.
Oh, no kidding.
And you and I remember, which is probably still the single greatest unplugged MTV ever had.
Yeah, that was really good. That was one of the best ones. Yeah, what a great concept Unplugged was. What a great idea.
And for you kids out there who don't know, what MTV's Unplugged was take a band that, you know, like Nirvana, put them on a stage in a small, like maybe like, what, 7,500 people?
Yeah, they're very, very small audience.
Very, very small audience. Yep. And just have them play instruments. No electric at all. No electricity at all, except for the microphone.
Yep, exactly.
All the instruments were unplugged.
Now, one of the famous versions was Layla. Eric Clapton did it a different way. That became a hit. Some other ones were really neat to hear how the acoustics in that setting really changed a song and made it sound a lot different and sometimes a lot better depending on your point of view on a song. But it was a really good concept.
And that's why, you know, Nirvana has always – that's been heralded as the best because, I mean, this was a grunge rock band.
Yep, absolutely.
And you just stripped them down and every song they sang had a different feel to it.
Yeah, exactly. The words were enunciated more. The words came through and had different what do you call it when you enunciate or you bring it into fruition? You know, you bring it up. I'm kind of losing my verbiage on that one. But you know what I mean? They had more impact. They would say a word in a particular way and you go, oh, yeah, he's really trying to drive that thought home and that metaphor home. So, yeah, it was really good. So they found a bunch of these?
There's a bunch of, if you go to Nirvana's YouTube channel, there's a bunch of other rehearsal clips.
That's great.
So of them just behind the scenes, you know, just watching Kurt Cobain in his glory because a year later after this happened is when he committed suicide.
Yeah, exactly. So God, that was, I think I told this story. I was dating a girl at the time and I remember calling her up and telling her and she started crying on the phone.
Yeah. That was a huge.
I mean, because I saw it. And again, this was before her phones would beep with news of the day. She was working at this restaurant, and I called her up when she got home, and she was bawling. She was crying. She was so distraught. Huge fan. It was so devastating when he died. But that's great. Whoever's running that, that's good. That'd be good to see and hear.
My second good of the day, and this is brilliant.
Okay, I can't wait for this.
I wish I had this back in college.
You don't use that term lightly, so this is going to be good.
I know you wish you had this back in college as well.
Okay.
I'm just going to read this first paragraph as it's here in this article. Anyone with unpaid parking fines at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus has the option to reduce or cover the cost of their tickets with peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, how great is this?
So... yeah, just bring in a couple PB&Js, and you might get your ticket wiped clean.
That's awesome.
Might reduce the cost. in college, you know, this my school, what I went to was a commuter school. I mean, there were dorms and like that as such, but it was a commuter school. And I was one that commuted to school. I didn't live on campus. I lived off campus, and I always had to find a parking spot. Sometimes I couldn't find one. Sometimes I would just park in the parking lot that I didn't pay to park in. And my trick that I used to do, which was really bad, is I would find the car that already had a parking ticket and grab their ticket and put it on my
windshield. Well played.
So that way I wouldn't get one. I used to do that all the time.
So when you went back to the car, if that car had left, you just rip up the ticket and that person goes, I got a ticket? I didn't get a ticket.
Yeah, I just threw it on the ground.
And let him deal with it. That's actually smart.
I think I had a glove compartment too full. But I had to keep changing it because it was one of those where like a little printed sheet would come out. And so it would have the time and date stamp on there. And so
right.
I had to make sure to change it out every so often. So that way it was legit.
That's good.
But if I knew that, hey, you know, I could get a parking ticket and just pay it off in peanut butter and jelly, something that every college student should be able to afford, would be loving life.
Do you think they would keep the ticket if you keep going in there and like, ouch, it's Ron again. Ron, okay, we thought this was cool, but every day you can't bring a jar of peanut butter and jelly and get out of these parking tickets.
You know, come in. It's like, I put a little something extra special in these guys.
Well, put it up in the pile over there with all the other ones you brought this week.
Maybe that's the only problem, that everyone starts bringing in, you're going to have a surplus of PB&J.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, hopefully they're donating them to a shelter or something when they get too many.
By the way, can somebody please bring in extra chunky, creamy? We have too many of those.
But, the university would take donations for this annual payment tradition until November 8th.
Because good job.
It's there to help combat student hunger.
That is great. Good stuff. That is good stuff. All right. So what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is just, you know, entrepreneurship. You know, people who come up with brilliant ideas that get busted.
Go ahead.
I have a bad one, then I have a bad one that turned good. So the first bad one that hasn't turned bad was that a woman in Louisiana who worked at a medical clinic has been arrested for selling fake doctor notes to high school kids.
Fake doctor notes to high school kids. So if you want a doctor note to get out of school, she was selling you fake doctor notes.
$20. That's all it cost you.
God, you would think that would never get busted at all. You would think like every high school kid in that area was in the mafia.
You know that there was one snitch.
That
ruined it for everyone.
You think they get these kids in a room and they're like, I'm not talking. All right, but it could mean I'm not talking. Where'd you get this note? I'm not saying. Like, you would want to keep that protected, wouldn't you?
Oh, my God.
You?
Oh, definitely.
You would go, you'd spend the night in jail to protect that, because you meant getting out of this.
It's a brilliant entrepreneurship.
Unbelievable, yeah.
The man is shutting down.
Shutting it down. That's amazing. I'm surprised, though, with Photoshop and the way kids online can make a meme out of anything, that kids aren't taking logos of doctor's offices and making their own.
You weren't supposed to say that on air.
Oh, I got you. That's right.
Now we're going to get shut down.
Next thing you know, I'm going to have all these parents telling me thanks for giving my son the brilliant idea.
Yep.
Golly.
Get ready for those hate tweeters.
Yep, exactly. Because you know the part-time receptionist at the school doesn't have an eye for that. She's going to be like, okay.
She just looks like, all right, says you were sick, Johnny. Doctor, that checks out. Date checks out. Okay, there you go. Here's your pass to get back to class.
Exactly. Oh, God. All right. So would you have a second bad?
I had a second bad, but there's hope for entrepreneurship, right?
Okay, got it.
There was a kid who was selling Krispy Kreme donuts. He was a Minnesota college student. He was driving to Iowa, buying a bunch on the weekend, like 300 dozen or so. I mean, something.
Whoa.
Like, or 300, maybe it was just 300. I mean, it was a ridiculous amount of donuts. He would buy them in Iowa, then drive back to Minnesota and sell them, resell the donuts. And he was making a good money. Krispy Kreme shut him down.
Now, why were they shutting him down?
Because
they're
not getting a piece of the pie.
Then put a donut place in where he is if he's making that much money.
I couldn't agree with you more.
So apparently you don't own the donut? Oh, well, I guess they could refuse the right to sell him donuts. I guess that's where they get it. But they can't. Well, I don't know. It's food. My brain is now coming up with a million reasons why this is legit shutdown.
Yeah.
So if I buy something from a grocery store, I can't resell that because I should have a license for that, right?
Yeah, you got to have a license. You got to have a permit.
Right? So if I went into the grocery store and I said, you know what?
I'm buying all the Oreo cookies.
I know the people in Chapel Hill, Tennessee, near my town. I know those people. They can't get this at their local grocery store. For whatever reason, their local Food Lion doesn't sell this. So I'm going to buy a whole bunch of this and I'm going to go down there and sell it. Somebody in that town would go, "Hey, you got a permit to sell food products?" I'm going to go, "No." And they're going, "Well, you can't do that. That's illegal." Okay. I get it.
Yep.
But if I went into a bookstore, and I bought a bunch of books, and I went to that town that doesn't have a bookstore and sold the books. Is that legal?
No.
That's not legal either?
You don't own the rights to sell that book.
Gotcha.
So this kid did, I mean, like I said, he drove into Iowa, would buy hundreds of donuts, drive back to Minnesota, probably just, you know, cruise the dormitory, say, "Hey, dozen Krispy Kreme donuts, you want some?" And probably was selling, I mean, making a profit. Krispy Kreme has reversed their decision.
Oh, they did?
Yes. They now have made him a independent contractor or independent operator.
Oh, this is a good idea.
And are now, which included, they decided to pony up 500 dozen donut donation. So he started up his business again. So
okay, good. Yeah.
Now what he probably has to do is probably still has to go to Iowa to go get his donuts because there's still none in Minnesota.
Right.
But now he probably sells them, and then for every what? You know, say if he sells a donut for 50 cents, every 10 cents goes back to Krispy Kreme or something like that.
Yeah, now he's got a business. Now he's tracking mileage. Yeah. He's getting tax deductions for all that. Now it's all legit.
Yep.
Good for him.
So there's a positive to the end of the story. It just isn't the man shutting him down.
That's great. That is great. All right, good angle to that one. All right, the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day. Baker Mayfield claimed he shaved off his handlebar mustache after the loss to the Broncos because he didn't deserve it.
Okay, now this is getting silly. He's trying to distract on the fact that they're 2-6 and he stinks.
So you can look at photos prior to showing up to the stadium. He had like that scruffy beard thing that he's always had, right?
Right.
When he was doing warm-ups, he had a handlebar mustache. You know, the mustache that comes down and then goes straight down.
Yep, sure does. And,
you know, it's not connected. So he shaved the cheek area, shaved the chin, just left that. Then after the game, that's where we got the Casey Affleck look-alike.
That's right.
So he shaved at least twice at the stadium. But he did that because he didn't deserve the handlebar mustache.
Wow.
I don't even know what to make of
this. I don't even know make of this, Baker.
Yeah.
Baker's going just a little too nuts here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, good on the reporter, whoever asked him, like, "Hey, man, right. Warming up, you had a totally different look. What happened?" And then his excuse, he just came up, was like, "Well, I didn't deserve that look.
Deserve the handlebar."
You know, yeah, because, I mean, I guess, you know, the look, it kind of harkens back to like a Joe Namath-like look.
Right.
And Joe Namath played well when he wore it well.
So that's what he's going with?
And Baker Mayfield, I guess, didn't feel he had a Joe Namath-esque performance.
I just didn't think of it. A handlebar mustache was deserved. Like, I didn't think you could grow. You grew one because you did something that allowed you to have the joy of a handlebar mustache on your face.
You have to earn it. Instead, trim it down and make it look like you're, you know, Casey Affleck. Or, I mean, you know, one of the wet bandits. Or, you know, I mean, just Joe the Plumber. That's what he looks like.
That is nuts. All right. Well, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Thursday. Again, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. Love to hear from you. Continuing along on SB Nation AM, I got a little college basketball news I got to get to next on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 1991 is the year on Throwback Thursday. Remember we were playing Heavy D, how much excited I was, how happy I was that we had that music? And now this is just sucking all the life out of me right now. It's a pit of despair and loneliness.
Were you? Was this song playing and you weren't all asked, the, you weren't asked was, to dance? Or was, did you get burned out
all
of dance?
It was played all the time. It was on all the time. Did they use this in Robin Hood?
Yeah, with the Kevin Costner version.
With Kevin Costner, that's right.
Which, God, you know what? Yeah, stinks. I know it got a lot of grief over it, especially since Kevin Costner didn't do an English accent and everyone else kind of did. Which is, you know, still to this day, it seems weird.
It is weird.
I still enjoy it.
Yeah, it was okay. It was pretty good. Alan Rickman was good in it because I like anything Alan Rickman is in.
Yep.
This hour,
rip your heart out with a spoon.
Right. Morgan Freeman was in that movie too.
Yes.
And Christian Slater.
Yes.
Christian Slater was in there. This hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Little college basketball. And listen, it's early in the season, so you know I don't make huge proclamations or anything like that. Virginia played last night against Syracuse at the Carrier Dome. Now, if you're thinking that seems like a weird matchup for the first game of the season,
hey, that's
you
a competitive
would,
one, right?
You would be right. You would be right. That is an ACC versus ACC matchup to open up the season. Apparently, that conference is doing that because Florida State played Pitt, and North Carolina played Notre Dame. And
remind me, who's the reigning national champion?
Virginia.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So this is.
And what is Virginia known for? Defense.
Letting teams score a lot of points.
Lots and lots of points. They give up a lot of points. Syracuse played
a blue blood. They're a blue blood.
They're a blue blood. They're a good basketball team. I don't think they're ranked in the preseason polls, but they're Syracuse, okay? They played in the Carrier Dome. Syracuse played 40 minutes of basketball against Virginia and scored 34 points.
In the fourth quarter, right?
No. They scored 15 in the second half.
Oh, my God.
After scoring 19 in the first. Syracuse shot 23% from the floor. They were 5 of 29 against Virginia from the three-point line.
Yeah, that got to hurt.
They shot 17% from the perimeter. And Virginia forced 16 turnovers, I think. In the game. Virginia basketball, baby. It may not be the most exciting basketball, but it's efficient.
I'll say this real quick. You got to stay tuned. Tune in at 9 o'clock because Brian Scrooge Barrett is a Syracuse
alum. Yeah, he might. He might go on this pathetic offensive performance.